How's your day?
Today is great. Last Wednesday was not great. Well, like the outcome of it was great, right? I have a ton of projects going on right now, collaborations, you know, all kinds of things, which is wonderful. I woke up Monday going, oh my God, all the plates are going to drop at the same time. And I was like, that's a weird thought. Where'd that one come from?
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Abundance Podcast. This week, I have my friend and mentor, Laura Holman. She is the founder and creator of the Endotype Formula, which she's described as the formula of you as a human. Because if we break down what makes us up as a human being, she says we're made up of our physical body, energy, deep emotions, and thought, and they combine to form our endotype formula. So our endotype reveals your design, it reveals how you are meant to work and operate, and if you are able to figure this out, then that means you have permission to be yourself. It means you have permission to have the flaws that you have, to have the fears and the insecurities that you have. It also affects the deep emotional cravings that a lot of people spend their entire life trying to figure out how to fill. Your endotype also affects your pattern of thought, and it affects your health and body functions. When we try to meet the expectations of the culture, we can become a disordered version of our endotype. So if you have had limiting beliefs, if you've had negative self-talk or imposter syndrome, or just very dark and intrusive thoughts, then your endotype is probably disordered. And I know for myself, this is definitely something that I struggle with. And I go through phases of depression and anxiety. I am definitely not a stranger to it. So I was really excited to sit down with Laura and get her thoughts and hear a little bit more about the endotype formula, how it impacts her clients and the implications, right? How it can help each and every one of us, and also practical ways to start becoming more of who we are. So excited you're here, and I'm super interested to hear what your thoughts are about it. So make sure to hit me up at The Abundance Coach on Instagram, and let's get right into it.
And so scheduled myself Wednesday off so that I could have a recalibration day, and then just went through all the emotions and all the experiences and dug into that feeling and reached out to coaches and got all kinds of different perspectives. And by the end had plans in place, knew what that inner voice was trying to tell me, and took action on the message that was there, and feel more confident that put the right support in to keep all the plates spinning.
I think it's just cool that, you know, as we grow as coaches, we're still like coming back to these things over and over again, you know, feeling like, oh my gosh, I have so much on my plate. So tell me, is recalibration day your terminology, or like how did that come about? Because I've never heard that term before.
That's what hit me on Monday. It was like, ooh, I need to recalibrate everything. So in December, prior to this year, the last 2 weeks of December, I spent down in Florida with my parents. And, you know, my real life, I'm a mom of two teen boys who are virtual schooling, who are here all the time, single mom in it, you know, like, so even when I'm relaxing, I'm still in mom mode, unless they're not here, which just hasn't happened in the last, you know, 12 months, because of COVID. There's always this part that's just always on, listening, trying to, you know, be preventative of the fights breaking out and things like that. So while I was down with my folks, right, it's like there's another adult. I can actually relax. I can like chill out. And spent some time just kind of really strategizing what I wanted 2021 to look like. And one of the big themes that emerged was collaboration. And then January was just rich with collaboration, as was February and March, and so many amazing things. And for the past couple of weeks, just have been dealing with extra stuff in this outside life. Business still going great. My immediate family is still going great. But because of this extra stuff over here, I was like, just feeling a little extra emotional or run down or whatever. I was calling it wonky, right? I just feel wonky, just a little wonky, until that Monday morning when I woke up and felt dread, like just panic. And I was like, okay, this is new. Like, let's dive in. Let's explore what's here. And I obviously need a day. And so that Wednesday, I left the house. I left my boys here. I told my boys, this is my day. Unless you're on fire, don't call me. I'm leaving the house. I went and sat by a lake. I just went and did me. And with all of these additional kind of learnings and diving into that fear and reaching out to the coaches, because the one coach was like, okay, or all the plates are going to fall. What if they're made of rubber? What if they just bounce? Okay. What if the plates are made of rubber? Okay. Another coach said, you can take a heavy vase and you can set it on a table and it's perfectly fine. But if you set it on like a music stand, that thing's going to tip off. She said, what if you just need another leg of support? And to which I thought, oh my gosh, I have so many coaches and therapists and assistants and staff. Like, I need more, but I did need to make some changes with the support and the staff that I had. And then I had another coach that said, you know, in a lot of countries, plate breaking is very cathartic. It's part of the healing process. They like smash the plates. She goes, what if some plates need to be smashed? Which of the plates need to be smashed? Excellent question. And a couple right away went, boom, boom. Oh, I know which plates need to be smashed. Okay, good information. And I think the whole time, my subconscious, unconscious self, this wonky feeling that I had been having for a little while, that I had been kind of blaming on externals, I wasn't listening to those inner voices inside of me that were trying to inform me of some of this until they turned up the intensity and it felt a whole lot like fear. So I heard it and I dove into it and then scheduled that recalibration day to be able to go, okay, now what? Now what do I set the intention in January. What about in April? What about now? What do I want this going forward to look like? And so came up with a few new intentions and a few action steps.
Yeah. Do you feel like you come to this pattern often where you get out of touch with yourself and it's like a constant coming back to? I'm just curious because it seems like a theme, you know, in your work as well.
I would say that for sure was a pattern that I had for a really long time. And that I think that a lot of people have. I have some real strong opinions about why in our culture we have that pattern. I've been working now with the Endotype formula for 5 years. And I feel like the majority of the time now, I'm very aligned. I have stopped resisting the messages of my protective side, which very often feel like fear. I've stopped resisting or diminishing the gifts that live on my possibility side. Instead, I lean very heavily into them. And I have intentionally chosen coaches and therapists and support that I know are a perfect match for me, because the Endotype formula shows me that, for different parts that I'm working on. It's like, okay, I really want to work on this part of me right now. Who's an ideal coach for that? And because I have so many people who have taken the quiz, I'm like, oh, yes, let me go talk to them. Let's hire them for a course. In the past, Sure, I threw money at everybody else's opinion. I don't know how to market. You tell me how to market. I don't know how to build a business. You tell me how to build my business. I don't, you know, like, instead of doing it my way and listening to those inner leadings that were always trying to lead me down the right path, but that I was calling terrible names, like judgmental and critical and even imposter syndrome. All of those terrible names we call the voices inside of our own mind. So it makes us not want to listen to any of them when all of them have been trying to give us awesome information this whole time.
Yeah, for sure. And as you're talking, I'm wondering, where do you most often see this, you know, in other people? And where do you think it comes from? You know, like, it just seems strange. It's a process I'm still working through as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on your website too, you're saying like the answer to your big mission is already within you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I talk about is like, you know, you don't have to do things the way society tells you. Everybody's in a 9-to-5. They haven't really thought about leaving it. And even if they do, maybe they think it's selfish. Maybe they think it's too risky because they don't want to put their family on the line. They have to provide, right? And to me, the key is really tapping in to self. So I just want to hear more about what your thoughts are about all that.
Yeah. I had somebody explain it to me this way the other day. You know, if we think about it like a bullseye, kind of like concentric circles, right? There's the inner part is what we're really, really comfortable with. The next level is kind of like where we are a little stretched, but still totally doable. The next level is like, I'm not good at this, or I'm not sure I can do this. And then outside of that circle, right, is like no go. This is too much, too big, too whatever. So if we're in our comfort zone, that center circle, we're totally comfortable. That might be somebody's 9-to-5. Totally comfortable. They know what that paycheck is. They know what their benefits are. They know what their hours are. It's very predictable. Might not be fun. They might hate it, but it's predictable. It's comfortable. And they start playing in that stretch zone, right? Like, I wonder if, even if that stretch zone is like dreaming, or maybe they take a course or whatever. When we play in our stretch zone enough, our comfort zone expands, right? And everything moves out a little bit. So I think every time we go through that expansion process of making our stretch zone into our comfort zone, right? If I'm going to keep going, I'm going to have to do some of these no-go things. Oh, and we have to get used to this new state, this new expanded space. And when we do that, there are a lot of things that we're in that no-go area we've never experienced before. And so the protective side of us, the side we've all been designed with, that is there for our protection, kicks in and starts giving us information, starts giving us little nudges, little bits of information. And it often communicates through the language of fear. Ooh, I'm feeling afraid of that. But what we have done in the West here in society is we've decided fear is a bad thing, right? I'm sure it goes way back more, but I was raised in the 80s and 90s, right? And the t-shirts, no fear. That became like all these people's mottos, their t-shirts, their hats, their everything, no fear. And in personal growth, we've even done it. Because if you listen in personal growth, development, coaching, all of these things, we call these fear triggers inside of our own mind, those nasty, terrible voices. We call it old belief systems. We call it limitation. We call it all these things. And then we frame it inside of the frame of overcome, stop, get rid of, eliminate, eliminating fear. Not possible. Also, not even the point. I think a lot of us have done a big disservice over the years Because now we're programmed. We believe that these voices that come up are somehow bad and wrong. And so we block it. And the more we block them, the more intense they get. It doesn't stop them because they're there to deliver a message. That's the whole purpose. That's how they were designed. And so until we get the message, they will keep coming back more and more intense. And at first, that looks like louder. It sounds mean, these voices inside of our head. And then as a last-ditch result or a last-ditch effort, these parts of us will physically slow us down by giving us physical symptoms. Maybe it's weight. Maybe it's inflammation. Maybe it's stomach issues. You know, like all these physical symptoms. And we're like, where'd this come from? I was never sensitive to any food ever before. All of a sudden, I can't eat hardly anything. Because our bodies are intentionally trying to slow us down and to get us to listen to these messages because they want us to be safe. We want to protect ourselves. The solution, I think, is to build in that time to listen, to learn how to listen, and to educate ourselves about what these voices inside of our own head are really trying to communicate. And finding tools to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I noticed this like kind of interesting dichotomy because I read that you've said like we forgot that life can be easy. But at the same time, on the other side of that, you're saying like, but it'll be hard, you know, but it's like easy in the sense that we don't have to fight ourselves anymore. Right. But it doesn't mean that it's going to be fearless. Right. So I wonder if you could just expand more on that.
Yeah. See, I don't think that fear has to be hard, though. I will tell you right now, I have gotten more done in the last 18 months of my life, as far as business goes, and as far as my own personal goals go, and as far as income generation goes. And it has all been so easy. Because once we're aligned, think about your car. Right? And you go in and you get new tires on, they always do an alignment. Because if your tires aren't aligned on your car and all kind of working together, you're going to burn through tires like crazy. Your car is going to wobble going down the road. You're going to get terrible gas mileage. And it's really dangerous, like to the car and to the occupants of the car. If the pieces and parts of ourselves are not aligned, then everything's hard. Everything feels stuck. Then when a fear voice comes up and we push it away and it comes up and we push it away and it comes up and we push it away, that's the hard part. For me now, when a fear voice comes up, it's like, oh, welcome. Hi. Well, what's the message here? Oh, don't go too fast on this. Oh, yeah, you're right. I've been meaning to make a contract for that. Okay, good message. And then I can go ahead and like it's gone in that split second of processing, right? Or that maybe it's a day of processing and recalibration. But all of a sudden, all the tires are in alignment again. And it's easy to steer your life to go forward. You're not wasting all kinds of energy resisting these fear voices. So I don't think that fear is hard. I think it's part of our design. It's just that our responses to it have been those of resistance for so long. That's what's creating the hard.
And so how do you recommend then that people start having this conversation with fear like the way you have? Because I'm like, it must not have been easy to get there. So
different methods work for different people, right? If ever you see a crazy woman driving down the road talking to herself, it may be me. I have out loud conversations with the voices in my head, like me say something, and then the other me say something. And it feels like, am I causing a mental breakdown? No, I just think it's a breakthrough. You know, so I will actively dialogue with myself. The thing is, this learning is coming from such a deep subconscious place that when you have those active dialogues, either in verbal, you can do it written, you can do like an active stream of conscious typing it all out or journaling it all out. for some people, they think more in terms of pictures. Now, I don't think this way. So I would imagine for them, it might look like a movie in their head that might be happening, or different pictures that they then have to interpret. I have another friend who, she doesn't experience it the way that I do at all. It's more for her, different emotions have different feelings inside of her body. So she's like, ooh, if I know that I feel kind of like, and she'll make a little face and twist up in a certain way. And that means it's this fear that's kicking in. Mm. And that's what works for her. So I think it's finding what those things trigger. I teach about these four basic fears, the four parts of our protective side. And then utilizing the endotype formula, adding in some additional information. Most of the time, people can get, is it a fear of being off your own path? Is it a fear of moving too quickly? Ooh, this feels like it's going too fast. That can also feel like, ooh, when's the other shoe going to drop? Right? Like, ooh, when's it going to turn bad? A fear of permanence. Oh my God, this is my life forever. Forever. And that like dread that comes with that idea. Or is it a fear of abandonment, which can also feel like rejection or being alone or not being accepted or being an outcast kind of thing? If these are the four kind of branches of fear and we know which one it is, and then applying the endotype formula to it on top, which gives us some additional information for each individual, we can then go, okay, so for me, fear of moving too fast is connected to intuition, which intuition is like your path forward, your inner knowing, your plan. And so if I'm fearing moving too fast, if that fear comes up for me, I'm like, okay, where am I not listening? What decision did I make that I didn't check in on or use my intuition to see whether or not this is the right thing? Where am I off of my plan or my path, you know, like, or not paying attention to that plan that I think that we are co-creators of? I think our plan is part us and part the universe conspiring with us for us. For one of my friends, her young child connects to significance or to her own importance. And so when she's feeling like, ooh, rejection, abandonment, what will people think? It's time for her to go in and go, okay, where am I not honoring my own significance? Where am I discounting how important I am to this process? And then in that moment, when she asks herself the right question, the answer comes right back and it's able to move through and process, because it's how we were designed to process. We weren't designed to be afraid of our fears. Our fears informed us of decisions we should then make.
And you've said a few times, like, we weren't designed to be this way, right? Like, designed by what or whom? Like, what do you mean by that?
I think everybody has their own opinion of that, right? So I let everybody have their own opinion. Personally, my personal opinion, I believe we had a creator. I believe we are of divine creation. And that because of that, there's a certain way that we operate. If that's not your jam, that's fine. Let's call it survival of the fittest. That we have become what we are because it works the best. And if that was the case, fear played a pretty important part. Fear was like, oh my God, there's a saber-toothed tiger out there. I got to make some choices here. And it moved them to action. It became the pattern. When I talk about design, I do think it was divine in origin. But what I know is that it's predictable. So when I talk about design, I'm talking about the endotype formula and the different components that go into making up who we are, how our thinking and our Jungian cognitive functions connect to our feelings of intuition or power or identity, these big cravings that we all have and we were all, again, designed to have. And then it connects to our body through the endocrine glands. And with all of those things in place, it becomes this really big picture of our mind, body, spirit, which I know is a totally kitschy thing to talk about in the coaching world. And yet I think the Endotype formula is precisely that. It's how we all work together. And, you know, you've taken the quiz on my website, and how I'm designed, the things that trigger me, the things that are my greatness, are not yours, because we're totally different endotypes. That's what I mean when I say design.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on that, because I'm like, I feel like you probably say that a lot and people just like go with it. They're like, oh, yes, our design. Like, yeah. And it's like, wait, but what? Let's take a step back for a second, right? Because people listening, they have no idea what the endotype formula is, sure, most likely. And so this is something that you have poured your life into to create, and it's become like a consistent tool for you. Yes. Like, you are able to predict, yes, able to work with certain aspects of people's insecurities and fears and things like that. So if you can just talk a little bit about what it is and how you arrived at it.
Yes. Yeah. The origin story, right? I think sometimes big ideas come along, tap us on the shoulder and say, I pick you. It's kind of like being picked at the school dance. You have the ability to say yes or no. Like, no, I don't want to. No, I don't want to. And then the idea moves on and it picks somebody else. I was fortunate enough about 6 years ago to start dancing with this idea. I'd always loved personality assessments. I was a big like four quadrant fan, like DISC. I was a big fan of that. I'd use them in my gym and in my life coaching and to train other people utilizing that same tool. And I had a coworker. I still had my gym at the time, and I had somebody who was renting some space down near my gym. She was a fan of another assessment. And I'd say, nah, yours is, I don't like yours. I don't know. It's too complicated. And she'd be like, no, I fixed that. And we started talking, and I said, I don't think you're fixing something. I think you're creating something new here. And that opened up a world. And she and I started working together. And I said, well, we need some more people to take your little simple quiz that you have here. Let me type all the people in my gym. They'll take the quiz. It was like a little boutique training studio. And they did. And I figured out in that moment that 85% of my income came from three of a potential 16, what are now called endotypes. And I was like, why do three people pay me over and over, like three personality types pay me over and over and over again, and the rest come and go fast? Why do they like me? I was like, tell me that. Let me explode my gym with that kind of, I don't know, she said. And then the other thing that started showing up was there was body styles that were attached to what she was using at that point was like Jungian brain function. And I was like, if you're telling me this is all based on brain patterns, why are there body styles attached to it? She hadn't even seen that pattern. And so we were working on that together, and eventually her life kind of took a left, but I didn't have the answers to my questions yet. And so I just kept saying yes to this idea that wanted to dance. And the next right researcher and the next right researcher and the next right researcher would show up, and more information. And I'd think, oh, I know what this is now. Let me go run out and do something with it. Turns out it wasn't done cooking yet. And it was like, it was not good. Undercooked food is never good. It was an undercooked idea. And so eventually, though, the full picture came into view about 2 years ago. And I started testing it and working with people, and then branched out in the testing method, and then could see more applications. And so it really is this really rich tool of how a person operates. And with that tool, you can do sales better. You can do coaching better. What I naturally was putting off in my gym was what was attracting those three personality types that wanted what I was naturally just giving out. It had nothing to do with the squats, nothing. It had to do with how I naturally spoke, how I naturally approached everything. what I'm doing now with it is working with a lot of co-creators and the collaborators to be able to expand the usefulness of the tool. So if it's something where humans are involved, the Endotype formula has a little something to say about it. I work one-on-one with some people, I work in groups with others, and then I am co-creating with a lot of other leaders in their fields to be able to develop the usefulness of what the Endotype formula is.
Hmm. And so you've been working with the Endotype formula, you said, for the last 2 years?
Well, it's been in the format that it exists in now for about 2 years. I've been working with this idea for about 6 years. Each time thinking, oh, this is like a weight loss system. And being from the gym industry, right? I thought, like, awesome. Now, does it have applications in that industry? For sure. Was that my job to create a whole program and a website and brand it all and write all kinds of sales and marketing and be able to roll that out? No, because I tried that. I tried that and it didn't work. Again, that wasn't my path that I was supposed to be on because it wasn't done cooking yet. And so each step of the way, more and more has been able to develop. But in its current format as it is, I'm still finding new applications, but in the current format that it exists in, it's existed for about the last 2 years. I've been playing with it for a lot longer than that.
Because originally you thought, okay, maybe it's a weight loss thing. Did you realize, like, what made you say yes?
The thing that got me was those two initial questions in my gym. Because I had been in the coaching industry and even in the personal training industry long enough to know that the majority of coaches and personal trainers don't make a sustainable income. I mean, that's the sad but true truth of it, is that a lot of them are making a part-time income. They're doing it because they love it, but they're not really making that full professional income yet. Or it takes them a really long time to fully develop that. So if I could figure out why those three client types liked me and would pay me all kinds of money, well, not only could I improve my own income, but I knew that was an idea that other people would buy too. And then the body style thing really grabbed me because I had always known that it was so much more about your thoughts than it was about calories and fitness routines. If we can change how we think, we can create some sustainable results. And I could see in certain clients that they'd hit a certain place in their body that their body didn't really want to move from. And that the accepted fitness ideals we see portrayed in magazines and we see portrayed in the media weren't accurate for a lot of people. A lot of people's bodies weren't going to look like that, even if they were perfect on all the calories and fitness routines out there. You know, let me understand this. And those two questions were what really, really hooked me. But I knew from the beginning that the coaching market was going to love this idea. There's so many coaches out there that are buying less than stellar marketing programs, spending all kinds of money on it to try and fill their funnel, but they still don't even know what they were designed to do, what they do so beautifully and effortlessly. I didn't. I was in my gym. I thought I was selling squats. That wasn't what I was selling at all. And so I knew that the coaching industry was going to be an excellent launching platform for this idea. I knew that right from the start.
But like you said, it obviously has applications like way further than that. But also one thing I did want to touch on too is like, this is probably a new idea for a lot of people, this idea that your thoughts may lead to how your body looks. And so it's interesting because you come from the fitness industry. So it's like, you know how all this shit works. Like, you're not over here like woo-woo, like, ooh, yeah. Like, I wonder, like, has that always been a part of your ideology? Or is it something that you, like you said, came to discover with the Endotype? And how would you respond to people who are like skeptical about that?
No, it wasn't always part of my ideology. I grew up with, like, the women in my family were very inactive and maybe used M&Ms instead of Prozac for a lot of years, right? M&Ms were their antidepressants. And so I myself had a very kind of thick body, especially post-pregnancy. I ended up being, and even in my early teen years, right? Teen years going through a lot of emotional stuff. The only coping mechanisms I grew up with was eating. And so when I was 19 years old, I was probably a size 22, 24. Lost a bunch of weight through my 20s, gained weight back through baby pregnancies. So I've been every different size of person. And after my second child, I decided to take on my body and push it into submission, right? Because that's what we're taught we need to do. So I hired the coach, I hired the trainer, I worked out like crazy. I did the chicken, the broccoli, the rice, the green smoothies. If I never see another green smoothie, I will be a happy, happy girl. It is not my jam because I got my body to a certain point. I got my body to a really good point. And for me, because I hadn't healed my thinking yet, it wasn't enough. Even though it was probably the smallest I'd been forever, I had great muscle definition, like all kinds of, it wasn't good enough. I didn't get it to that next smaller size. And probably if I had gotten it to there, it still wouldn't have been good enough because it hadn't gotten to the next smaller size, right? It was just too trippy. And then I went through a divorce. So I'm still working out in the gym. My body has found its kind of comfortable size, the size where I can work out and I can eat like a human and have children and a career and all of that and still maintain. And I went through a divorce and I didn't change my eating. I didn't change my workouts. And my body got bigger without my permission. And I was like, what is going on? And so when the answers showed up in the endotype formula that our thoughts, what we're thinking, our unexpressed emotions can have such a great effect on our endocrine glands. And for some of us, we have weight-gaining endocrine glands attached to our protective side, right? So that fear that you're not listening to, that fear is also attached to your pancreas. And so it's causing blood sugar issues, which cause weight gain. Or it's attached to your adrenals, which is connected to cortisol, which is causing weight gain. Or connected to your pituitary, which is your master driver, so it's causing weight gain. When we learn how to come into alignment, our body will come into alignment also. And it makes finding a body style that is perfect for your endotype a whole lot better, a whole lot easier. And it has much less to do with, gotta get that run. Now, I'm not saying anything's bad about running. Or anything's bad about eating food that energizes your body. It's just the difference between forcing it into submission and working in alignment. And it brings one, not so fun. The other one, way fun. So let's do it that way.
Yeah. And like as you're talking, it's just fascinating because you've always emphasized body, right? But for me, like, for example, I don't typically think about my body. I have very low body awareness. And so why do you think you've always had the fascination with body? Is it because like it was like societal things telling you like, oh, like women should look this way? Because for me, I've never been self-conscious about my body, but I haven't been overconfident about my body either. It's just like there. Like sure. Just a thing that I use. And that sounds bad, but it seems like, you know, with the endotype, there's like this partnership, right? Between the body and you. And it's like a flow. And there's, but it's like, man, if I'm thinking about my body this way, that means there probably isn't a flow happening, right? So what would you say to that?
Well, and some people just have a more, again, it's part of their endotype. My niece is a type. In the endotype, there's three words to your endotype title. There's your red flag trigger word, which might be stubborn, or it might be overwhelmed, or it might be lonely. Your red flag trigger word. There's your body style that could be adrenal, pancreas, balanced is one of them. And then there's your unique title, interpreter, conductor, builder, whatever. So for those that are the balanced endotype, they have this really interesting natural ability to just kind of tune into their body. I don't know that they ever think about, I should lose weight. But it's more like my niece is this type, and she's like, she'll come over and I'll be like, hey, because she's young. She's a teenager, same age as my sons. She comes over and it's like, yay, kid day. Hey, you want some cookies or like want a treat or what? And my boys are generally all for that. And I watch her and she kind of wiggles around and she kind of feels into her body a little bit, pauses for that minute, feels into her body. Not right now, maybe later. Like ever since she was little, she's had this ability, natural ability, to just kind of tune in and know what she wants. For a period of time, she wasn't eating meat. Except for when she did feel like she wanted meat. So she wasn't making any rules. There was no like militant, like I'm all veg all the time, because there were certain times that her body told her she needed a steak. She'd just be like, Mom, I need a steak today. And they'd get her a steak that day. And then she'd go back to, you know, cooking her veggie meals back again. So I think that for some types, there's this natural ability to just kind of know how to balance this physical thing we call a body. That doesn't mean that it's not showing up elsewhere. It just means it's not showing up as body fat or additional storage. For some of those types, it may show up as anxiety. And in many of its formats, you know, nail biting, cuticle picking, it may show up as autoimmune issues sometimes when we're not listening to those fear voices. It may show up as a lowered immune system. And there's lots of ways that our body can try and get us to slow down that don't look like weight. It just so happened I was in an industry where I paid a lot of attention to weight. But like my son, Jesse, he eats every and all things. And you can see every single, he's 16, you can see every single one of his ribs. You've always been able to. My family swore he was malnourished for that. It's like, you guys, he eats. But for him, you know, one of the ways his body slows him down, he lacks flexibility like crazy. And he's 16. He always has from the time he was little. And so that's a thing he has to pay attention to. So it's just certain patterns start emerging for different endotypes.
Yeah, that is so wild, because as I was listening to you describe your niece, I was like, that is so alien to me. Like that, because I'm somebody who just, when I'm sad, I eat. Like it just doesn't show up, right? Like in my body per se, but I just like gorge. And that's like what I've associated with love, with comfort, with just feeling okay. And so that's like something I have to watch out for, right? So it's just fascinating. Like there's just so many facets, right? I guess what do you feel like is the biggest change that you've seen in people that you've coached through the endotype? Not specific changes, but overall, like what do you think it allows them to really tap into and become?
My personal mission, right, is to give people permission to be themselves. And that looks like a lot of different things in the different programs that I run, and I work with people in different abilities. But there's always this moment where they're like, yeah, that's me. Like right now I'm working with people in branding, you know, solopreneurs, small business owners, to be able to create a brand. And through the quiz, it makes it really easy. People will come in and I'll be like, okay, so you're this brand. And some of the brand names are a little weird, right? It's like the ruler or the jester, like the brand archetypes. So I say, well, you're the jester brand. And they're like, you know, because they don't understand it yet, right? So then I start explaining. And I'm like, okay, so you like to have fun. And even though your work that you do is around really serious subjects and really serious things, it's about fun. You laugh. They laugh. And it's more importantly about truth telling. And they're like, oh my God, it's yes. And I'd be like, great. let's brand your business around that. And they're like, yeah, it gives them permission to be themselves. So whether it's how you manifest or how you brand your business or digging into some of these fears and going, yeah, yes, those are my fears. Cool. You're allowed to have them. They're here to tell you some stuff. Let's just figure out what it is. We live in such a comparison world and a comparison society that the permission to do things our own way, business, career, family, bodies, whatever it is, to do it our way and be okay with that, I just watch the burdens and the weight that they carry start to fall off of them. And that's really cool to be able to see.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you're interested in figuring out what your endotype is, you can take the free 5-question quiz on Laura's website, endotype.com. That's also linked down in the show notes below. If you're just wanting to support the show, you can do one of two things. You can leave an honest review in Apple Podcasts, or you can head over to gotabundance.co/boba to treat me to a boba this week. And again, let me know if you have any feedback, any suggestions for topics that you would like to hear more of. I'm all ears for any feedback that you have. I'm always looking for new people to interview, so definitely hit me up and let's share your story with the world. Thanks so much for listening. This is Joyce, the Abundance Coach, and we'll see you next time. I was going to release your episode like in May, but I think I want to do it earlier, if that's okay.
So you're thinking like still yet this month?
Yeah, like this Thursday.
Okay. All right. Hot damn. Let's go.